Hello and welcome to What Else Do You Do? I'm your host, Misao. I'm an indie producer in Montreal working for Studio Cut to Bits. And today we have Alan from Twin Drums.
Hi, thanks for having me. So I'm Alan, CEO and game designer at Twin Drums. And we're a game developer, a small indie studio based in Berlin and remotely around Europe and West Africa.
Very cool. So usually the episodes are about what people do outside of video game development, but this is part of our People Running Diverse Studio miniseries. So yeah, tell me a little bit about your studio. How was it founded?
I've been in the industry for around, I think, 7-8 years now. I used to work for a bunch of bigger companies and it was great, but I really felt like something was missing. Like most of the products, the games I was working for like had white characters, the themes, you know, like the usual kind of, you know, Western places or locations and stories. And I really felt like I wanted to work on a game that told stories and kind of, you know, showcase voices from other parts of the world. And especially in my case, you know, as an African European, specifically more Black and African stories. I did want to work on an MMORPG as well for a long time. So I was like, you know what? Let's do it. Let's start something. So I was lucky that some awesome people decided to join me. And around a couple of years ago, this kind of journey started with Twin Drums, working on the game called The Wagadu Chronicles, which is this Afro fantasy MMORPG. We've had Kickstarter already. We have some backing from Riot Games. And just fresh news from a couple of days ago, we got funding from the German government as well. So things are moving on and we'll be releasing in a couple of years.
Wow, that's quite exciting.
Thank you.
Especially for an MMO too. Like, I feel like that's kind of like a joke / nightmare when people talk about like, yeah, I've decided I'm going to make an MMO. And people are like, oh no.
It's true. It's true. It's terrible. Actually, there's such a, I think there's a death zone around the word MMORPG. And like at the beginning, I was a bit whispering. It's like, it felt like a second coming out. Like being gay was not enough. It's like being gay and working on an MMORPG. It's like, what are you working on? It's like, I hope you're fine with that, but it's MMORPG. And people go like, oh no, I'm fine. I have a lot of friends who work on MMORPGs. It's okay.
That's pretty funny. So who are the founding members of your studio?
Actually, it's just me. I'm a solo founder. And for a while, I was literally by myself kind of working on documents and, you know, coming up with the setting and the super early prototyping. And then quite early on, got Iga, who became the art director, and then Martin, tech director, and then a bunch of other folks. But I'm solo founder.
Okay. What does your studio makeup look like in terms of like diversity from a like racial, gender, etc.?
Yeah. So that's something that brings me a lot of joy to talk about. Basically, we've fluctuated between being 50% or more than half women, which has been really, really, really awesome. And I feel I've been learning a lot as a cisgender man from this. And then around 50% as well POC, around a third Black specifically. And then queer is interesting because I haven't explicitly asked to everyone, but I think more than half of the team is queer. We're around like 13 people. And I just keep on discovering, like I recently had a chat with like a team member who was like, I'm not sure if I'm queer, but you know, I definitely dream about, you know, sleeping with people of my same gender and sex. And I'm like, I think you might be queer. So it just keeps on happening. Which is great. Like there's a space for people to explore themselves, which is awesome.
That's really amazing. Like you've done such a great job of having a diverse team. What do you think is your secret? Like, how did you manage to attract so much diverse talent?
So one thing I can say for sure is that it's not just because of who I am. Because some people assume, of course, you know, as a gay Black man, it's easy for you, right? People just come, you know, diverse folks come to you. And that's not true. It's a lie. Because if I had made no effort and just, you know, grab people around me from just, you know, the teams I was working with in previous companies and made no effort to kind of differentiate the team, I'm very sure that most of the team would be white, cisgender, straight men. Because that's just, from a networking point of view in the industry, is the low-hanging fruit, especially the more senior you go. So it required some effort. And I think the key for me was like being open-minded about people. And I mean about CVs as well. Like there are some very senior people in the team with lots of experience, but there's some other people too who were like, had, you know, very, you know, very brief CVs, more inexperienced. And I opened my mind very much on looking at, for instance, soft skills a lot. So that was one thing that helped people who are quick learners. But then additionally too, I think it's the way you project yourself. So I've been very clear since the beginning about how important diversity is, but not just through words, but like, you know, through actions as well, you know, like posting pictures of pride, or all of our concept art for a while was only women, which was just something that happened because, you know, Iga, our director, is a woman, and we didn't speak about it. She just decided to draw lots of women. And then that kind of became an unconscious, how would you call it, the opposite of bias, like non-bias?
I mean, bias doesn't necessarily, it's not a bad thing, right? It's just, it's a tendency. So a bias could be a good thing.
It was a good bias. And I think all of these things together, like, you know, actions and of course words, I think that led to lots of applications from diverse folks. But again, I said, it's a mix of kind of being open-minded, not trying to go only for the 20 year experience programmer. Because of course, 20 years ago, the industry was even less diverse than it is today. So you need to kind of mix and match.
I definitely understand where you're coming from. If you're using conventional recruiting methods and recruiting conventional profiles, like, you know, 7 years of experience, 3 AAA games shipped, that kind of stuff, you are definitely going to end up with the same kind of people for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a mix in the end. So, and I think I'm very happy. I will say this as well. I'm very happy there's some like white cis males in my team. I think it's awesome to have all the representation, and they're welcome to join the team, and I will have more. But it's just about having everyone, not just them.
Yeah, for sure. So you were saying that you are a studio that's based out of Berlin. So do you do most of your recruitment for on-site work? Is it a studio that, before the pandemic, were you on-site, or have you always been more of a distributed studio?
So great question. And we have always been distributed. And actually that fits our focus on diversity and inclusivity because, for instance, the tech director has 2 kids. And he said very early on, you know, for me, it's very important to be able to spend time, be flexible with my time, to be at home a lot, you know, to support my partner in parenting. And, you know, this is just one example. I had other folks who were planning to move out from big cities or, you know, and so definitely we've been actually, I'll say almost mostly remote. Like we do have an office and we are hybrid and we meet sometimes, but like 90% of the time we're working remotely. Like now I'm in my office, but there's no one, for instance. And that's kind of very typical. Like tomorrow there'll be one person in the office coming and he's the only person this week. So, And I think less than half of the team is in Berlin as well. I think like 40%. And the more we grow, the lower the percentage of folks who are based in Berlin. So we will always have a little office, but it's more like for brainstorms, gatherings of those people who are in Berlin or people who are traveling to Berlin sometimes. Mm-hmm. But being remote, I think, really helps to broaden your horizons, find people from different countries. We've worked with someone from Lagos recently. I myself, I'm going to be in Accra in winter. That's what I do. Usually I flee European winters and then go to Ghana. So, yeah.
I'm based out of Montreal, so the idea of fleeing winter sounds very appealing.
You're welcome to join in Accra this winter.
Unfortunately, I have a small child that's in daycare, so it's more difficult for me to just kind of pick up and leave for a couple months out of the year. But
bring all the family, you know.
Yeah. You said that less than 40% of your workforce is in Berlin.
Yeah.
Is your team styled primarily in Germany, or is it pretty much everywhere?
I think, I have to think on that. I think roughly half or a bit more than half is in Germany. I think a bit more than half. Okay. I think it's so not relevant to us. I have to think about it because with that, we don't work in German. We don't, I'm not German myself. So, but I think, as we grow further, probably the percentage will decrease below 50%, but it started maybe around maybe 70 and it keeps on going down. I think we're around 50% now.
Okay. And are you still within like the same time zones with most of your staff, or do you work across different time zones as well?
Yeah, time zone is an interesting one because initially, like last year, I was very open-minded about time zones and I even had like some calls with folks in California and so on. But then I realized time zones are very tricky and I don't want Twin Drums to be a bunch of freelancers you know, working separately and then just gathering once a week to check on each other. But we are a company building a culture and vision and, you know, interacting with each other, not just like once a day. Therefore, time zones are quite important. So I'm not excluding completely that we might work with people from very different time zones, but I think Europe, Africa, Middle East are currently primary focuses for us. Possibly a bit of the East Coast of the Americas, so kind of Brazil, East Coast, and so on. Mm-hmm.
It is tricky because, like, one of the things you want to maintain is to make sure that people have, like, a healthy work-life balance and a healthy, you know, and the problem that I've seen with some of the more distributed teams that have kind of, like, wide time zones is that it's very hard to have, like, a, I wouldn't say necessarily 9 to 5 because that's what people want to have, but, like, a kind of a normalized work schedule when you're working with a team that's very far away in terms of time zones?
I think you speak wisdom and I agree. Yeah. And on top of this too, because of work-life balance, we are, by the way, a 4-day week company. And that was something that started straight away. It was a bit of an experiment for me. It came from a team member and I was like very early beginning, like, let's try this. You know, I think it really works. And I was like, oh, and as a startup, we need to work, you know, a lot, and we need to, you know, we don't even have enough funding for the long term. But you know, I think being a CEO too is a lot about, a startup founder is a lot about being humble as well, not just about being confident. It's a tricky balance, and you constantly have to negotiate it. And in that case, you know, I decided, you know what, I'll be humble. I don't know about this. I never did it before, but I did some research, of course. It was not completely uninformed. I saw some companies doing it, some countries kind of pushing in that direction. Let's try. And it worked super well. Like now, I'm not sure I could go back to working on a 5-day. And they were very productive. We worked really well. Of course, this is combined with like a focus on production. I think we're really being keen on like planning, production, updating our plans, discussing plans and tasks, avoiding burnout. Like some of us come from like AAA and burnouts, or even not. I've experienced burnout even in working in marketing many years ago before switching to game design. So it's a great topic you're mentioning because it's definitely something we spoke about from the very inception of the company.
I think, and it also gives you access to more people, right? Because like people who need more flexibility and people who are not, I think it's a wonderful initiative. You're seeing more and more in the indie space kind of explore 4 days, 4-day work weeks. Yeah. And I think it's a great trend. This whole idea that, you know, like people need to work more hours to be more productive, I think is this kind of almost like 19th century ideas on management that this is something I've always found to be extremely frustrating about the games industry, that there's all these like published ideas on like human resource management, like, you know, like while video games are new or newish, people management is not. And there's all this like academic material out there on like productivity and like, you know, what happens with excessive overtime. Yet we still seem to think that things will be different for us. And that's always been very like mystifying for me and quite arrogant, to be honest.
I very much agree. I feel that maybe one of the issues we have as an industry is this focus on passion. And don't get me wrong, I'm very passionate about what I do. I think you need to be passionate to quit your job, you know, stability, safety, and kind of throw everything up in the air and start your own company with no funds. Of course, I understand the value of passion, but I think, you know, we put it on a pedestal and then use it as a way to hide some of our paper over some of our issues. And and like we are very bad at management. Like I actually studied international management many years ago, so I kind of already had luckily a bit of that mindset of like this is something people study and, you know, write Harvard papers about, and, you know, people's, you know, researchers spend all their lives on it, so it's important. And then it was quite shocking working in some gaming companies to realize that even people who are meant professionally within those organizations to, you know, plan people's time and protect it and so on, had no clue, actually no understanding at all. And I don't think you need to be, you know, have a PhD in management or anything, but just like, as you say, like just basic understanding of the theory, or even just understanding that you need to think about it. And actually, it's a skill, you know, time planning and management. These are actually skills that deserve their own time, their own focus. They can be grown. And yeah, that's, but passion seems to take over. And it's like, you know, if we have passion, we'll make it on time. And often it happens, but yeah, it's a, I think this was a triggering already. So sorry to anybody listening if I'm triggering you, but I've been through this. I know how it feels.
Yeah. And it's certainly not sustainable.
No.
Yeah, so I run a Discord for indie producers. So I talk to a lot of producers, and I've worked in production management for, at this point, I don't know, maybe 7 or 8 years. And I mean, I guess it's not shocking anymore because I'm not surprised, but like the number of people who get zero experience, like zero training to become managers in our industry is quite alarming.
Yeah.
I feel like majority of producers and people who are managers in our industry come from like a background of being direct contributors before that.
Yes.
You know, and receive like best case scenario, maybe like 3 days of training.
Best case, yeah.
Yeah, like I'm serious. Like I out of all the people that I've discussed, like I think I consider myself pretty lucky because I asked HR to take a couple of classes and they approved it to take classes during the workday. I used to go downtown and attend a couple of university classes on some management stuff, and there was like a 7-day like program that was organized by the company that was in partnership with a local business school. So like that's probably more than almost anybody I've talked to that
99%.
Yeah, I mean, outside of people who, you know, pursue like training on their own, like obviously there are a lot of people who get like MBAs and like stuff on the side, and sometimes it's subsidized by the company, but like it's certainly not something that's like mandated or even encouraged most of the time.
Not compulsory for sure. Yeah. And it's true, there's it happens across industries. So, you know, it's not just within the gaming industry that you have these promotions for experienced people in their own jobs to managers. But they're such different jobs. It's like there's this straight line drawn between being a senior at some tasks or some job, and then all of a sudden becoming a people manager, a spreadsheet manager, a time manager. And these are like completely different skills from being a good artist, a good designer, a good programmer. And I definitely do feel like other industries are a bit ahead of us in this realization and kind of, you know, as you said, trainings and trying to fill the gaps, or maybe even understanding that people don't have to become managers, like being a great senior, maybe you should stay senior. And I think one company I worked for actually started realizing this, and they created a new role. I think they called it, maybe they just named it principal or something like this, for people who were not people managers. They were not managing any, you know, products, but they were just like extremely good at their jobs, and they got like some salary bonuses or whatever, but they didn't change the line. They didn't become managers, and they were happy, and it worked better for the company. So I think there's a lot that can be done to, you know, promote people, make them feel appreciated, while not just throwing folks into managerial roles without preparation, just as a reward, right, for their time.
It is kind of crazy that you're going to take the best people who are doing, like, who are the best at a specific skill, and then, like, have them stop doing that and then do something that they have no experience in. And that's a reward. Like, that is kind of an absurd idea if you really think about it.
Yeah, it's to take your best people and put them to do something completely different they don't know much about. Just do it.
Yeah,
it's a double loss, actually. It's true. It's terrible.
Yeah. Let's talk about recruiting. So how do you go about recruiting? Like, what's your process?
Yeah, so far we haven't done a ton of recruitment because we're still quite small, and it's been quite organic, especially at the beginning. Last year we did a bit, for instance, and it was a mix of social media was very useful because we project ourselves a lot through social media, especially Twitter and Instagram. We, you know, we share pictures, speak about who we are, intervene in some of the conversations going on there. When I say we, is mostly me, but let's assume there's someone in the team that is helping me out, which happens sometimes. But, you know, we're a small team, so it's a very direct voice of the team. And so at the time, we shared through Twitter, for instance, a position, and then a couple of websites as well. I'm trying to remember the names. I can't, but there are a couple of more indie, I think, indie work websites.
Work with indies, maybe?
Maybe them, yeah, maybe okay. them. And I think they were very nice as well, so I wish I remembered. Thank you, website. maybe this one. And we got a lot of applications and quite diverse ones as well, and quite good ones. So I'm not sure if in the long term we'll need to be more forward and maybe like reach out more websites. And maybe I think as we grow, we'll need a bigger pool. But for now, like this kind of mix of organic, local community, sharing within networks, and a couple of indie websites was more than enough.
Okay. Do you work with any organizations that promote diversity or specific underrepresented groups?
Officially as a company? Like if
Oh, no, I mean, in terms of your recruitment, do you like reach out to like, for example, like women in gaming type of organizations or?
Yeah. So I considered, in the end, it was not necessary because I think our hiring was so limited that we found great people straight away. Okay. But actually, and for the future, I have looked at a couple of organizations and we might get in touch. Like, for instance, Black Women in Coding or so on, right? Like, but not yet. I think we've been lucky so far, but that's definitely it's on the radar.
Okay. I think it's about time to wrap up. Do you have anything that you would like people to know about how do you create a diverse culture and maintain it?
Yeah, so I think it's think about it. I'd say if you're thinking about it, you're kind of halfway there already because you end up reading about it, maybe sharing things online about it, talking with people about it. So once you're in this loop, it becomes like a virtuous circle. Like we really need to realize that our world is broken. Therefore, our industry is broken. Now there's issues, there's barriers. Just saying, oh, things will improve by themselves. Like there's no need, you know, I'm just going to hire the best people. You know, I hear this still, unfortunately. And there's no such thing as the best people because people are results of this broken world. So what you see around you is just us trying to survive, trying to survive this world. And so what you think is best and non-best people is people maybe who are more broken, people who are less broken because of reasons. So just think about our society, the barriers that are there, and try and kind of open your mind. And then you will see wonderful people shining around you once you kind of remove these barriers and look deeper into reality, a bit like the Matrix, which is the right pill, I don't remember, but take the right pill and open your eyes.
Well, thank you very much. That was a great conversation. I think it was extremely informative. So
my pleasure.
Thank you and have a good day.
Thanks, you too.
Thank you for listening. And thank you to Dave Wallace for providing the music. And thank you to Therese Lance for providing the logo. Bye.